Collide, written by Phoenix or the Flame, read by Sweaters in the Summer. Summary. The year is 2184. An asteroid 60 kilometers wide is on a collision path with the Earth. As a last-ditch effort to save humanity, the EEU, Eastern European Union, launches 4 cosmonauts, each carrying 300 embryos into space. Only one makes it off the planet alive. Or, a speedrun heated rivalry retelling in space. Chapter 1. The Hateful Cold Eternity. Day 1. Today, an asteroid the size of Moscow and Yekaterinburg combined collided with the planet I call home. Called home. Home no longer exists. Home is now an oversized metal canister hurtling through the endless void at 48% of light speed. I have no proof it is gone, only the absence of proof that it is not. I can't decide whether I'm fortunate to have been halfway to Neptune when impact occurred. At least I would have known. Despite the oppressive inevitability, there is still a part of me that thinks, maybe. But no. I am Ilya Rozanov, pilot cosmonaut of the Kamchatka vessel and sole survivor of Earth. Day 4. Comms are still down. After waking, I spent the first 2 hours performing systems checks and the next 2 trying every available channel.
This is Ilya Rozanov to Mission Control. Mission Control, do you copy? Over.
My voice is hoarse from saying it so many times. Radio silence is a menacing thing. It bears down on you with the gravity of 1,000 suns. I wonder how many more clichés will be restored to their original meanings thanks to the end of the world. A fate worse than death. Surely one more. Day 10. I miss Svetlana. She is a good woman. Was a good woman. It is strange using past tense. My father would say, Ilya, you are lazy. Ilya, you have no work ethic. You are a disappointment. But I will practice. I will become proficient at even this. Svetlana was a good woman. Earth was my home. I am hopeful. I must keep my wits about me. I have a mission. Day 11. I miss my mother, but that is nothing new, even if it is different. Before, it was a dull ache, one that thrummed at nearly the same frequency as the rest of my body. Easier to ignore, easier to forget. Now it's a dull knife carving her name into my chest cavity so that I can do neither. Today was dull. Dull, dull, dull. This is what I trained for. This is what they trained me for. Day 12. I checked on the embryos today. I'm not completely alone, even if they are terrible conversationalists. Day 22. I started talking to the AI. It is nearly as bad a conversationalist as the embryos. I said, "Good morning." It replied,
"The morning you are experiencing is artificial and was designed to simulate the 24 Earth hours you are biologically attuned to."
I asked, "How are you today?" It answered,
"Loneliness is to be expected on long-haul, single-seat missions such as this. I noticed you have not done your daily exercises. This is recommended. If symptoms persist, a mood stabilizer will be provided."
I jerked off instead. Day 41. I do not know which is worse, the loneliness or the monotony. Every day is the same. Wake up, eat breakfast, perform systems checks, log maintenance, eat lunch, transmit into the void, work out, eat dinner, study protocol, sleep. Life before this was not abundant with freedoms, but there were some. I miss going to the nightclub. Not most of all, but more than I thought. "Let's go out," Svetlana would beg, and I always put up a fight, even if I never intended to stand my ground. We'd dance, smoke, stay out past curfew, and when we got caught, Sveta would say it was her idea. Part of it was that her father was high up in the EEU, a punishment would never stick. The other part of it was that she believed in me, fiercely. I didn't deserve her. Day 44. The loneliness is worse. It is boundless, infinite. It reaches out of me in spectral tendrils, always searching, always probing. For what? I don't know. Before, it was temporary. Now, it is enduring. I wish it would understand this. I feel so stretched out, but I need to contain it. Everyone is counting on me. Everyone is either dead or not yet born. The duality is testing me. Is this an honor or a condemnation? Am I humanity's last hope or its final breath? There is too much time to think. Too much silence to prevent the thoughts from spinning themselves into form. I gave the AI a name today. Marlowe. Marlowe told me to take a mood stabilizer. I listened this time. I jerked off after. Day 104. The mood stabilizers work. I feel nothing now. It is worse and it is better. Tonight I'll enter cryosleep. When I open my eyes again, 5 Earth years will have passed. I wonder, at what point do I stop measuring things against the ghost of a planet? Back at the Academy, we would enter cryosleep as part of our training. Sometimes I would dream of Mother, bathed in light, obscured by the sheer curtain of time. Waking is the worst part. The instructors had told us it would feel like a hangover, and it does. But it's more than that. It's the acrid, gummy reflux of relief churning with disappointment. My mother died by suicide when I was 12 Earth years old. I wonder, at what point do I stop orienting myself to the ghost of a person? Day 1221. Marlowe woke me 708 days early. It detected a ship. By the time I overrode mission protocol and initiated deceleration, we were already 400 million kilometers from its location. It is too short a distance to achieve max acceleration and not overshoot. This craft was built for a single destination. Much of its technology was only tested theoretically. I'll have to use the backup thrusters to reach the ship. Marlowe says it will take approximately 200 Earth days. My mouth tastes of battery acid. This is not part of the mission. Every deviation is a strike against mission success. I think of the embryos. I don't fucking care. There could be someone out there. The most likely scenario is it's an uncrewed human ship launched for data capture purposes. It would be a disappointing discovery, but at least I would know. The not knowing will kill me. The not knowing is guaranteed mission failure. I have to try. I have to hope the ship will still be there, that it is captained by a human and not a computer or some hostile, acid-spitting alien. The odds are not in my favor. Sveta used to say, "Your curiosity will be your demise." I hope she is wrong. Chapter 2. Here we are, an atom and a star. Day 1410. "Found you," Ilya says, as the other vessel comes into view through the porthole. "Marlowe, run a scan."
The craft appears to be Canadian-built, though there are no Earth records to confirm its existence. Based on materials and technologies, it was likely built between the years 2152 and 2167.
The AI's voice is both sing-songy and monotone, and it soothes and grates at Ilya with equal efficacy.
"Can you tell if it's crewed?"
It looks too big to not have at least one person on board, not to mention the spinning outer rings suggest it may have artificial gravity. Still, Ilya shoves his hope in a steel container in his mind and airlocks it for good measure.
Based on the design, it appears to be a crewed ship capable of supporting up to 2 human life forms.
189 days he's waited for this moment. The ship is right there, and yet the words to initiate contact are a clot in Ilya's throat. It's a real Schrödinger spacefarer situation. Right now, there exists a universe where on the other end of the comms is a person. A living, breathing, human fucking being to share this crushing burden with. But right now, there also exists another universe. The source of Ilya's hesitation, which is an entirely inadequate word for what he's feeling, but no one ever taught him the word for might die on the spot if things don't go the way I need them to. Ilya punches out a breath at the same time he throws his hands down. He opens his mouth to give Marlow the command, but the AI cuts him off before he can make a sound.
Incoming audio signal.
Ilya sputters out a laugh. All this to be shown up by a fucking Canadian. His father would be horrified. Patch them through.
Patching through audio,
Marlow confirms. From the ship's speakers comes a crackle, followed by a man's voice.
This is Shane Hollander, Canadian astronaut aboard the Thunderbird vessel. Do you read?
His voice is measured, almost robotic, but unlike Marlow's, there's something unmistakably human about it. No amount of insulation or aluminum could ever dampen the sepulchral tone of a desperation so colossal. Ilya's heart is thumping hard against his ribcage. He swallows, summons his English. Though he speaks many languages, he's terribly out of practice, what with his only conversational partner being a Russian-speaking AI. I read you, Shane Hollander. He recognizes the same desperation in his own voice. If he's lucky, it will be eclipsed by his accented English. A nervous laugh echoes throughout the cockpit, and Ilya doesn't know if he's the one making it. A human. Alive. He thought he was the only one left, finding each other. It was improbable to the nth degree, marginally short of a complete fucking miracle.
Is everyone...
comes the voice overhead, but he doesn't finish his question. Ilya understands. Yes, everyone is dead. He doesn't see the point of sugarcoating, nor delaying for that matter, the truth. It wouldn't be the first time his kindness was mistaken for coldness. Probably won't be the last. You have video feed, yes? Ilya asks, suddenly needing to see the man whose heart he just shattered. A pregnant pause, then...
Yes.
And if I send you video signal?
I might accept.
I might call. Hollander answers immediately, his face blinking into view on the display. He is unshaven, bordering on unkempt, with shoulder-length hair in desperate need of a trim. Still, Ilya can tell that they are similar in age, give or take a few years. I am cosmonaut Ilya Rozanov. The words taste stale on his tongue, neglected.
You're from the EEU,
Hollander says. Not a question. Ah, yes, and you are from Canada, he replies. Also not a question. I didn't know Canada had a space program.
We don't. Not officially, at least. Or we didn't, I guess.
Hollander scrubs his face with both hands. When they fall away, Ilya's gaze is drawn to the dark circles that sag heavy under his eyes like hammocks. Hollander continues.
When the climate crisis got really bad, in the middle of the 21st century, a group of scientists and engineers started a collective. They secured mass amounts of private funding, but operated on an entirely cooperative model. Their mission was to achieve interstellar travel within 100 years, maybe find a suitable exoplanet for colonization.
Ilya realizes his mouth has turned down into a frown. Hollander sounds like he's reading from a script. Maybe he is. Or maybe this is just how he is when he's nervous. It would be understandable. Ilya is, too, even if he'd never admit it. So, nothing to do with Vastator? Ilya asks, holding back a wince as he says the asteroid's name out loud. Vastator, the Destroyer.
Not at first, but then early sightings kind of accelerated things.
I don't understand. Early sightings were 25, 30 years ago. You're, what, 25 at most?
22, actually.
Huh, same as me.
I was born on the Thunderbird.
Gilpt Hollander, Ilya hisses, slipping back into his mother tongue. He realizes something then.
Your parents are on that ship? You are not alone?
Ilya doesn't know why it makes a difference, but it does. Not for himself, but for the man in the screen. The man in the ship, a mere stone's throw away. Relief begins to unbuckle the vice on his heart. Only, yoked, Ilya curses again, as tears well in Hollander's eyes. The man shakes his head.
They died last year. Solar flare. They were fixing a damaged panel on the hull. It killed them instantly.
Hollander is all Ilya can manage. The words evade him. English words, Russian words. What could he say, anyway? To be alone by design in the universe is one thing. To be alone due to some freak accident is another thing.
It's fine. I mean, it was going to happen eventually, right?
Yes, but not like that. Ilya pauses, stares off into the middle distance for a few seconds.
My mother died when I was young. She took pills. Many.
I found her. It's not the same, but anyway, I'm sorry, Shane Hollander.
Thanks,
Hollander replies, wiping unfallen tears from his eyes. Ilya spends the next 3 hours catching Hollander up on the past 10 years since he and his parents last received comms from Earth. It's a grim tale, one that he isn't happy about recounting, but he'll tell it if it means talking to another human being. When Ilya is done, the Canadian drops his head forward, clasps his hands behind his neck.
I'm okay. I'm just freaking out, he says. I'll be okay in a second.
Hollander, Ilya says. Hollander, he repeats more softly. He wishes he could reach out through the display, put his hand on the back of Hollander's neck, squeeze the meat of it reassuringly. I want to tell you everything is okay, but I can't. It's a fucking mess. But at least we are not alone, yes?
Yeah, you're right. Okay, enough,
Hollander says into his knees before peeling upright. He takes a deep breath, nods his composure back into place. His eyes seem brighter when he opens them and... are those freckles? Ilya squints to get a better look until he remembers he's sitting in the most expensive aluminum can ever built and uses his thumb and forefinger to zoom in on the display. Freckles. An entire galaxy of them dusting the man's cheeks, the bridge of his nose. For someone who's never experienced the sun's rays, he has an awful lot of them. Ilya wonders if they taste like stardust. Day 1411. I am surprised your ship was still here, Ilya says, then takes a sip of coffee from the vacuum-sealed pouch. It's morning the next day, and he and Hollander are having breakfast together. They'll both have to perform their ship's respective systems checks shortly, but for now, they get to bask in the company of another person.
I thought about leaving. Hundreds of times, maybe thousands. I told myself, keep going, finish the mission. I'm supposed to be in cryosleep right now, you know, headed to Tau Ceti, but then the ship's impact sensors alerted me of a passing vessel and, I don't know, I just couldn't fucking bring myself to move from this spot.
Hollander's cheeks go pink, and he looks away from the camera. It's adorable. Ilya raises his eyebrows, tests his luck.
You waited nearly 200 days on off chance a passing ship detected yours? And on off chance whoever was piloting would turn around?
Fuck off,
Hollander says, as a small defiant smile pulls at the corners of his lips.
You spent 200 days trying to find me. What's the difference?
Ilya shrugs. He knows there's no difference. If anything, he was the more reckless one. 300 human embryos sit in stasis at exactly negative 196 degrees under his watch. Humankind's last shot. Him. Sometimes it's his mother's voice he hears, brimming with belief and pride. Other times it's his father's, said with a question mark.
Him? Is that the best we can do?
Right now, it's the latter.
Selfish, selfish, selfish.
And Hollander, well, he's missionless, though Ilya doesn't say as much.
I should do systems checks, Ilya says, before polishing off his Syrniki.
Yeah, same,
says Hollander, and the display goes black. Ilya wipes his face with a microfiber towel before the beads of accumulated sweat float away. Unlike the Thunderbird, the Kamchatka doesn't have any mechanism to simulate gravity. This is a ship built for traveling great distances, not exploration. Certainly not comfort. Anything categorically non-essential to mission success was deprioritized. Gravity did not make the cut. So Ilya runs on a treadmill every day, strapped into a harness to both hold him in place and direct counterpressure into the interior ship wall. Marlow, Ilya says, as an idea takes shape. Send a video signal to the Thunderbird. A half minute later, the freckle-faced Canadian pops onto the display. Normally, Ilya uses it to watch old recordings of sports matches while he runs. Or porn. Okay, it's usually porn. Shane Hollander, he says on an exhale, realizing quickly they're doing the same thing.
Rosanoff,
Hollander replies as he leans forward, then propels himself back, his shoulders rising as he does. A rowing machine, maybe?
Everything okay?
He asks. It doesn't seem insincere. I am lonely, Ilya whines, and I'm bored of porn on my ship. Hollander's eyes grow wide. Beneath the freckles, the skin of his cheeks bloom a shade of pink that reminds Ilya of the cherry blossoms in Sochi.
Fuck's sake, Rosanoff,
he hisses, turning his face from the camera. Oh, you do not have porn on ship? Hollander gapes. His whole body goes still. Ilya raises his eyebrows in question.
No, I don't have porn on the ship. I mean, maybe there is some, somewhere on the servers, but I haven't gone looking.
You are 22 and have not looked for porn? I don't believe.
I mean, it's not like I had a lot of privacy until a year ago. And then I was kind of, you know, in fucking mourning.
The look on his face is one of undiluted exasperation, and Ilya knows he's hit a nerve. He didn't plan to lead them here, but then Ilya didn't plan much of anything. Plans were made for him, and in the apertures between, he tended to let spontaneity reign. Ilya has always been an act-now-apologize-later kind of person, which is not to say it didn't get him in trouble, but rarely were the stakes this high. Hollander, I'm sorry, he says. That was, how you say, not sensitive?
Insensitive,
Hollander says with a scowl, and Ilya is grateful for the correction. He'll take a scolding over silence any day. Ah yes, insensitive. I will be more sensitive in future. No more talk about jerking off.
Who said anything about jerking off?
I mean, was implied. Porn. Jerking off. You don't jerk off. Is fine. We move on.
I never said that.
Never said what, Hollander?
That I don't jerk off.
Ilya assesses the man whose cheeks have deepened in color. Okay, he says, making a mental note of the way Hollander's nostrils flared just then.
Okay, well, if you don't need anything, I've got some lab work I need to get done.
Yes, okay, Shane Hollander. You go do your lab work. I will be here, not watching porn.
Whatever.
Bye, Ilya says, before the display goes black. He knows he is smiling. He knows because he hasn't felt those muscles work in a long, long time. Day 1415. What is on agenda today, Shane Hollander? Ilya asks, between bites of porridge. They've been having breakfast together for 5 days now, and Ilya looks forward to it every simulated morning, even if it did take a few days to adjust. He didn't tell Shane, but after the first day, he told Marlow to adjust the Kamchatka's clocks to match the Thunderbird's.
Can you just...
Can I just what?
Call me Shane, please.
It's the please that has Ilya's cock pressing against the inner layer of his red jumpsuit. Maybe it's because he heard it so rarely growing up. Rarely, and then never. Or maybe it's because somehow he knows Hollander, Shane, wouldn't say it unless he really, really wanted it. Okay, Shane. He makes eye contact as he says it, and Shane, to his credit, maintains a connection, their eyes boring into each other across several hundred meters of interstellar medium.
And what do you want me to call you?
Shane asks, far more earnestly than the words merit. A deluge of mostly Russian and entirely inappropriate terms flood Ilya's mind. He must have smiled or laughed or something, because Shane interrupts his thoughts with a laugh of his own and a very innocent,
"What? Fuck off."
"You can call me whatever you want." He winks at Shane as he says it, and Shane swallows visibly before averting his gaze. When he directs his attention back at the camera, back at Ilya, his eyes are glassy. It's unnerving in the same way jumping into a frigid lake is. It wakes you up, reminds you that you are human, with human needs and human vulnerabilities. "Call me Ilya," he says, then.
"Ilya,"
Shane repeats. His smile is understated, but it envelops Ilya like a warm blanket, all the same. "Marlowe," Ilya says from his sleeping quarters. It's well past the time he typically goes to sleep, but that's no surprise. Ever since he found Shane 5 Earth days ago, sleep has become a fickle companion.
"Yes, Cosmonaut Rozanov,"
the AI replies. "Transmit audio to the Thunderbird."
"Transmitting audio."
Seconds later, Shane's voice comes over the ship's speakers.
"Is everything okay?"
"Yes, everything is okay."
"Oh, good."
"I have idea," Ilya says, before closing his eyes. Just knowing Shane is on the other end of the comms is making him feel more relaxed already.
"Go on."
"Tomorrow we will race."
"What do you mean?"
"You will go on treadmill. I will go on treadmill. We will see who can run 4 kilometers the fastest." A chuckle and then,
"You're on."
"I hope you will not be too mad at me."
"When?"
Ilya shrugs, smiles a half smile. He knows full well Shane can't see him, but he hopes he can hear it in his voice when he says, "When I humiliate you." Shane snorts.
"You fucking wish."
Day 1416. When Shane's face flashes onto the display, Ilya has to do a genuine double take. The man before him is not the same man he saw yesterday. His face is clean shaven, his hair smoothed down and tied back into a messy bun. Ilya had made approximations of what he must look like under the scruff, and while they weren't inaccurate, they were wildly insufficient. The man is beautiful. Full lips, square jaw, perfectly arched eyebrows, and those adorable fucking freckles. They have nothing to hide behind anymore, for which Ilya is suddenly grateful.
"Morning,"
Shane says into his coffee. Because Ilya is physically incapable of saying any of the things he was actually thinking, he says, "So, what, you got tired of looking like shit?"
"Fuck off,"
Shane laughs. He's doing that more often now, and Ilya tries not to think too deeply about why it feels like dawn rising in his heart. "Oh, I understand. Is the race?"
"What about it?"
"You take seriously. Mr. Competitor. Mr. Olympian."
"It's just been a while, I guess. Since it mattered, what I look like."
And Ilya can relate. He's spent more time than usual in front of the mirror these past few days. His curly hair had crept down to nearly his shoulders, and he finds he likes how it looks. His face is all sharp angles, not that he's complaining. It's what made him quite popular with the women, and men for that matter, at the academy. But the softness suits him too. The way the waves crest and peak around his face like the gentle ripple a duck makes in a pond. His father would have hated it. Anything longer than 2 fingers earned him a sneer, if not a sheer. It's childish of Ilya, he knows, to relish in the quiet rebellion. Grigory is dead, just like his mother. Just like everyone else. Everyone but...
"Have you always had long hair?"
Shane asks, as if reading Ilya's thoughts. "Ah, no. Short, usually."
"Well, you're pulling it off."
And just like that, Ilya is never cutting his hair again. Ilya spends the next several hours thinking about freckle-formed constellations. When it's time for the race, he floats to the designated fitness area of the ship. It's small, but it serves its purpose. Shane's face and upper body come into view. He's already on the treadmill, the up and down of his shoulders indicating a steady walking pace. "I have idea," Ilya says, as he clips himself into the harness.
"Yeah, I know, we're doing it."
"No, better idea."
Let's hear it.
A, how you say, wager? Shane nods and Ilya continues. If you win, I will do what you want. For entertainment, sing a Russian song, dance, whatever.
And if you win?
Then I get to watch you jerk off. With the recent changes in Shane's appearance, Ilya can track the exact journey the blush takes across Shane's skin. From cheeks, to temples, to ears, to neck. It goes right up to his mock neck collar, which is zipped to the topmost tooth. And Ilya wonders how far down it ventures.
You won't win,
Shane says, with what appears to be maximum effort. Ilya shrugs, grins wickedly. We will see. Shane does not win. He curses at the same time Ilya celebrates, chalks his loss up to the ship's artificial gravity. I think you did on purpose. Ilya doesn't actually, but he is pretty sure it'll get a rise out of Shane. The look on his face is homicidal, and Ilya stifles a shudder.
I'd rather die.
You are cute when angry. Shane scowls, but the slight upturn of his mouth betrays him.
I will get cleaned up now. We'll collect my winnings later.
When?
Ah, surprise.
Bye, Rozanov,
Shane says, his skin dewy with sweat. Ilya craves salt, like he craves the sharp tickle of grass against his shirtless back. Ilya holds out as long as he can, distracts himself with a sponge bath, then systems checks, then maintenance. He eats an unoffensive lunch of reconstituted beef stroganoff before settling into the cockpit bucket seat. Historically speaking, Ilya doesn't get nervous around prospective lovers. Then again, none of his past lovers have been the only other living human in the known universe. It's a big deal in the same way him making it out of orbit and not his three comrades was a big deal.
Marlow, initiate video signal to the Thunderbird.
Initiating video.
Ilya swears in Russian when the display lights up. He's going to combust. He's going to go full supernova. Shane, in glasses. There's something so wholesome about it. No one back home had glasses, not with the technology to fix it so readily available. But Shane didn't grow up on Earth. He didn't have access to modern-day ophthalmological treatments. Didn't have friends. Didn't have porn even, apparently. Worse than that, he's never gone swimming in a lake. Never felt the silky, cool caress of the water inching higher and higher as he wades in. Never known the nervous delight of something you can't see brushing against your ankle, nor the time-honored tradition of lying on the shore, watching water droplets evaporate in the sun. Hell, he's never even taken a real bath. Ilya's heart wrenches.
What?
Shane smiles. His eyes dart around, and Ilya interprets that as nervousness.
Your glasses.
Oh, yeah,
he says, before raising a hand to remove them.
No, Ilya says firmly, and Shane stills. Leave them on.
Shane drops his hand, licks his lips.
Touch yourself.
The command drips effortlessly from Ilya's lips like honey. There is a pause, short and chasmic. Shane brings his hand to his lap, strokes his cock over his jumpsuit. Ilya zooms out so he can see the whole of Shane's body, his chest undulating in rhythm with his breath.
Yes, like that. Is good.
Shane's breath hitches, his eyes fluttering shut.
Unzip your suit, Ilya says, as his own cock thickens by the second.
Without hesitation, Shane tugs down the zipper to reveal a nearly sheer white undershirt. He shrugs the uniform loose from his shoulders, and it pools around his waist, a navy blue puddle of fabric.
Good, but need to see more.
Greedy,
Shane replies as he lifts his ass, slips the suit down to below the straining bulge in his underwear.
Better, but still need to see more.
Ilya palms his own cock, squeezes. Shane stretches the elastic of his briefs, pulls it down until it cradles his balls tautly. His dick looks hard, painfully so, and Ilya curses the space between them. What he wouldn't do to wrap his lips around that cock, to swallow him down.
Hollander, your cock is so hard.
Rozanov, tell me something I don't fucking know.
You are leaking.
Again, I am aware.
Your thumb, Ilya says. Run it through the wetness. Shane complies, and it does something to Ilya, the way he submits. Now taste yourself.
What?
Taste yourself. Describe to me. Shane's eyes snap to Ilya's, but he doesn't put up a fight, just pumps his cock twice before swiping his thumb across the slit at the head of his cock. He brings it to his mouth, licks the pad of it tentatively with the tip of his tongue, before sucking it fully into his mouth. Fuck, Ilya groans. Tell me. A vulgar pop echoes through the cockpit when Shane pulls his thumb out.
It's salty,
he says huskily.
Like tears, only more bitter.
Ilya runs his own hand up and down the length of his dick. He's the hardest he ever remembers being.
Touch yourself now, he says. Then, no, slower.
Neither of them is going to last very long. Not him, but especially not Shane. This is a man who's never had a sexual encounter with another human being. This is a desperate man, a man who will do anything. Ilya wants him to have everything. Shane strokes himself with what appears to be a tight fist, knuckles white and cheeks a fiery red. He tips his head back, revealing the long line of his throat.
Perfect. You're so perfect, Ilya mutters, before regressing into Russian expletives.
Ilya,
Shane says, and Ilya gets it. Why Shane wanted him to use his first name. It rings through Ilya's body like a resonant note. Despite the distance, despite the improbability, they are here, together.
Ilya, I need...
What?
I need to see you, please.
With all the efficiency and grace of a world-class athlete, Ilya strips down to his briefs, then watches Shane's expression intently as he removes those last. Shane's facade is a shattered mirror.
Fucking hell,
Shane whimpers as he pumps his dick, and Ilya matches him stroke for stroke.
I'm gonna come,
Shane says. Ilya's eyelids want to flutter shut, to surrender to the ecstasy, but he forces them to stay open, to watch as Shane's eyebrows scrunch together. His lips part and then release. Ropes of pearly white shoot from Shane's dick, painting his stomach and chest. It's enough to send Ilya barreling towards his own orgasm.
Fuck, Shane, he punches out,
grabbing his briefs just in time to catch his own powerful release. Coming in zero gravity is no joke. Ask him how he knows.
That was so fucking hot,
Shane says, voice saturated with blissed out contentment.
Yes, was very hot.
It dawns on Ilya. This mission has always been dangerous, but this is the first time he might actually be in trouble. Day 1420. It's been 10 days since Ilya made contact with the Thunderbird. 10 days since he learned for certain he isn't completely, depressingly alone. The past 3 days have played out similarly to race day. That's what Ilya is calling it now. A new reference point to measure against, to orient himself toward. He and Shane have breakfast together, then perform their respective spacefarer tasks before meeting back in the afternoon to jerk off together. Ilya always tries to convince Shane to stick around after breakfast, but Shane insists on maintaining his routine. Today, Ilya tries a different approach.
Come on, Hollander,
Ilya whines. He likes using Shane's last name when he's horny, but he does so sparingly. Shane asked him to call him by his first name, and he wants to honor that, even if the alternative gets him a brattier response.
No.
I will come to you. I have suit. 1 hour. That's it.
Rozanov, no.
Fuck's sake, Shane. My AI has more personality than you.
You fucking asshole.
Well, it's true.
Ilya, there is protocol.
Fuck protocol, Hollander. Protocol is moot. Protocol ceased to exist when Earth exploded into trillion fucking pieces.
No.
No?
No, I can't jeopardize the mission. Not mine and not yours.
Take off your clothes.
What?
If you will not jeopardize our doomed fucking missions, then I demand you take off your clothes. I want to watch your dick get hard to the sound of my voice.
Shane sets down his coffee. His eyes burn into Ilya's, a mixture of anger and desire. He removes his clothes slowly, folding each item into a perfect rectangle as he does. It takes an eternity for him to get naked, but Ilya doesn't complain. What would be the point? Every minute not spent in this man's orbit is agony. The longer he can stretch it out, the better.
You think you're so fucking smart, don't you?
Shane asks. He just stands there, not touching himself. Ilya realizes he's doing exactly what was asked of him. Ilya brings a hand to his chest, glances over both shoulders.
Who, me?
You think I don't know what you were doing?
And what was I doing, Shane? Ilya licks his lips, watches Shane's dick twitch skyward.
Demanding too much, so that your follow-up request seemed like a consolation.
Ha, and they say you are not smart.
Who says that? Everyone is dead.
I'll let you work that one out, Mr. Intelligence, Ilya drawls.
Fuck off.
Shane is fully hard now, and Ilya pulls his own cock out in response.
Sit down, he commands. Then spread your legs.
Shane's jaw ticks. His Adam's apple works. He's nervous, but he doesn't back down. He never backs down. He takes a seat in front of the camera, spreads his legs wide until Ilya can see the pink pucker of his hole.
Fuck, Hollander, he says,
stroking his dick with a loose fist.
Have you fingered yourself before?
Shane doesn't answer verbally, just nods his head in the affirmative.
Show me.
Without a word of protest, Shane sucks two fingers into his mouth until they're slick with spit. He brings them to his hole, circles the tight opening before pressing in, his ass swallowing both fingers with what appears to be very little resistance. It's the single hottest thing Ilya has ever seen in his life.
Hollander, fuck, look at you.
Shane starts pumping in and out, and with that, little mules of pleasure tumble from his lips.
Imagine is my cock, Ilya says,
as he begins fucking his fist in earnest.
Yeah, I want it.
You want my big cock in your ass, Hollander?
Fuck yes, I need it.
You want me to come inside you? Fill your hole with my seed?
Yeah.
Can you come like this?
Yeah, I'm close.
Fuck yourself harder for me, Shane.
Shane fucks himself harder, panting and moaning without a single shred of self-consciousness.
Hell yeah.
You prince, you angel, you fucking god amongst stars, Ilya says.
But it falls too easily from his mouth for it not to be Russian.
Come now, he says.
In English, he thinks. And Shane comes, legs quaking, dick spurting like Mount fucking Vesuvius. Ilya follows and... Yep, he forgot about the zero Gs. Well, that's a concern for future him. Day 1431. 3 weeks. That's how long it takes for one of them to crack, ending this game of real talk chicken. It's Shane who loses, which doesn't surprise Ilya. And it's not because Shane is weak. It's because he's brave, far braver than Ilya could ever dream to be. In this game, there are no winners. For both of them, this is a blip in their respective missions. And when it's over, Shane is headed to Tau Ceti. Meanwhile, Ilya is headed to Alpha Centauri. It's the plan. It's always been the plan. The thing is, Ilya, as has already been pointed out, is not big on plans. But Shane? Shane is a different kind of animal.
You know, Alpha Centauri was the first star system we visited,
Shane says nonchalantly, between bites of breakfast burrito. The bounce of his knee betrays his cool demeanor, though, and Ilya knows this is not an unserious kind of conversation.
I mean, I was only a baby, but I have access to all the mission logs and data.
Yes, you mentioned. There is a planet there, yes? In the...
Ilya doesn't know the English words for the scientific term, so he waves his hand as if summoning it.
Inhabitable zone,
Shane supplies.
Yes, inhabitable zone. And...
Ilya swallows, braces for the answer he's afraid of, before he even asks the question.
Is habitable?
Shane bites the inside of his cheek, looks away for a second before squaring his gaze.
It's not uninhabitable. Not entirely, at least. But it would be...
He seems to consider his words.
It would be very difficult. The probability of even short-term survival would be 10%.
10%. Ilya doesn't like those odds. But then it's not like there is anything remotely close to a sure thing these days. Shane fiddles nervously with his burrito wrapper.
There's a supply cache not too far from here. An Earth year, maybe less,
he says. Ilya is gobsmacked. A supply cache? How?
When they launched the Thunderbird, they also set up 4 drone-piloted supply caches. My parents were never meant to return to Earth. They were supposed to live out their lives, traveling between star systems. And for that, they needed fuel. Supplies.
Okay, Ilya says, the syllables drawn out. A lump forms in his throat, made of fear-dipped hope.
Come with me,
Shane says quickly. And then the words start spilling from his lips like a dam has broken inside him.
To Tau Ceti. Don't go to Alpha Centauri. There are 2 confirmed candidate planets, maybe more. And this ship was built to support 2 adults. I'm running low on supplies, but if we hit the cache, we'll have more than enough to get to Tau Ceti.
The lump grows bigger, presses on Ilya's trachea until he can hardly breathe. This is a choice he doesn't want to make. A choice that will likely kill him, if not by some external force, then by an internal one, slowly and malignantly until he wished he was dead. Tau Ceti is not my mission, Hollander.
I know, but...
I have embryos, Ilya chokes out.
You have what?
Embryos. You know, not person, but could be if gestated to full term.
No, fuck, I know what an embryo is. I just don't understand.
They didn't send me up to space to just die, Hollander. They send me to repopulate. Start again.
Oh.
Yes, oh.
I didn't know.
You didn't ask.
Cosmonaut Rozanov,
chimes Marlowe's voice from the sleeping quarter speakers. What, Marlowe? It's fucking middle of night.
The night you are experiencing is artificial and was designed to...
Oh, fuck off, you degenerate fucking computer. What do you want? Ilya interrupts.
Incoming audio from the Thunderbird.
Accept! Accept! A crackle, and then Ilya is calling out to the empty space. Shane! Shane, are you okay?
Aw, were you worried about me, Rozanov?
You are not dying?
No, why would I be dying?
Well, it's middle of night, and...
Technically it's not night. Technically it's...
Oh my god, Hollander, are you actually fucking computer too?
Am I fucking a computer?
Ilya rubs his eyes, pinches the bridge of his nose. This man is exasperating beyond measure. And yet Ilya loves him. He fucking loves him. Oh, Ilya is in so much trouble. Just tell me what is going on. Why are you waking me up in middle of simulated night?
I have an idea.
Okay.
You said you have embryos, yes?
Yes.
And I have temperature-controlled storage. I'd have to toss out most of the samples my parents collected over the past 2 decades to make room, but who cares?
Shane keeps talking, and Ilya tries to interrupt. Hollander.
No one left on Earth to analyze them.
Hollander.
Not like I need them for-
Shane! Shane stops talking. This is not a bad idea, but the embryos need to gestate. Inside my ship is 3 gestation chambers. You and me can try to repopulate, but I don't think it works that way. A laugh erupts from the comms, and Ilya can almost imagine Shane is right there beside him.
I already thought of this,
Shane says through the laughter.
I think if you can remove the gestation chambers from your ship, then float them over here, I can retrofit the 3rd cryogenic station my parents built for me to support 2 gestation chambers.
2 is better than none. And 10% is hardly a chance at all. But can Ilya really do this? It's not just the mission he puts at risk, it's his heart. Maybe Shane doesn't love him like he's grown to love Shane. Maybe he never will. And oh god, what if something happens to Shane? And then not only will he be alone, but also completely fucking brokenhearted. He wouldn't survive it. He knows that more than he knows anything. Shane's death would mean the same fate for Ilya.
Ilya?
Shane says, interrupting his spiraling thoughts. You can do this? Ilya asks. You can, how you say, retrofit your ship to accommodate gestation chambers?
I mean, yeah, probably. My mom was one of the top engineers in the world. and my dad one of the top biologists. And if you send me the schematics, I'm sure between the two of us we can figure it out.
And I thought you were just pretty face.
That's on you, Roz.
Yes, is on me. And if we do this, you will be on me, riding me, sucking me, is second pilot's second most important job.
Fuck you, Rozanov.
The comms go quiet then, and Ilya worries he's gone too far.
That's not what this is, you know, you and me. It's more than that. And it's not just because we're the only two people still alive. I want you here, with me. I want to be with you. I want a future, with you.
You really think that far ahead, Hollander?
I mean, yeah, about this.
And this is what you want?
Tears well in Ilya's eyes, and he wipes them away before they coat his eyeballs, as crying in zero-G tends to result in.
More than anything.
Shane's voice is soft and earnest, and it fills Ilya with courage, makes him feel invincible. Ilya takes a deep breath, calls on his mother and Sveta for strength. They would want this for him. They would tell him, go, fly, take a chance, be happy. Be happy.
I love you, Ilya says.
It's nuts. It's absolutely fucking insane, bordering on irresponsible, that he's even thinking it, let alone saying it. Out loud. To a person he met just 3 weeks ago.
It's also the only thing in this godforsaken life he's unequivocally sure of.
What follows are the longest 3 seconds of silence he's ever endured.
I love you too,
Shane says, finally. It's crisp and clear, and in that same voice that said,
this is Shane Hollander, Canadian astronaut aboard the Thunderbird vessel.
Only 2 weeks ago. Except there is a quality about it that strikes Ilya's heart like a tuning fork. It's the sound of a lover's smile. They fall asleep like this, with their comms channels open. It's the best sleep Ilya's had in decades. Which is good, because they have work to do.
Chapter 3. Oh, Your Love is Sunlight. Day 1445. Today is the day. They're calling it the Great Migration. Ilya is thankful for yet another new point of reference. The last 2 weeks were spent building the gestation chambers and prepping the Thunderbird to receive the embryos. And yesterday, Ilya made the highest stakes pass of his life when he sent the insulated embryos flying through space and into Shane's cradling arms. They won't know for sure whether any of the embryos were corrupted in the transfer, not until they attempt gestation. Still, Ilya is hopeful for once in his life. He looks back at the aluminum tube that's been his home for the past 4 years, gives it the middle finger, and then pushes off. He's tethered himself to the ship, just in case. It would be pretty fucking dumb of him to make it this far, only to overshoot his trajectory and end up floating into the void. The seconds stretch on, and Ilya wonders if this is what time dilation feels like. And then, just like that, he's in the Thunderbird's airlock. He releases his tether, and then the door slides shut, prompting a red light to go on, indicating repressurization is in progress. Ilya's heart is beating double time, his pulse crashing in his ears like waves against a cliff. When the green light flashes, his practiced hands twist and release the levers and clamps that keep his spacesuit airtight. He drops his helmet, only it doesn't hit the ground, since Shane had to disable the ship's artificial gravity mechanism. The second his suit is off, Ilya suddenly, gloriously, feels warm hands on his face, soft lips on his lips. Shane kisses Ilya fervently, and Ilya kisses him right back. He tastes of peppermint, a hint of ginger. And then Shane's mouth curves up into a smile, and fuck if that's not the most decadent part yet. Desperate to see Shane in the flesh, to just look at him, Ilya reaches for his very last remaining atom of will and breaks the kiss. He's rewarded with the sight of Shane's chestnut eyes, shining wetly.
Ilya brackets Shane's face with open palms, then wipes the tears gently with the pads of his thumbs, admiring Shane's angelic beauty as he does.
Is this what it feels like? Ilya wonders. To touch the sun? To bask in its mighty brilliance?
That the world had to end for the two of them to find each other is not a thought Ilya likes to consider. As it is, he'll take what he's offered, gladly and with infinite gratitude. Hey, Shane says, after a few solid minutes of them kissing and grinning like idiots. Ilya didn't realize he'd been crying, and it's Shane's turn to be on tear removal duty. There, Shane says, then reaches for Ilya's hand, strokes his thumb along the back of it. Better?
Better, Ilya says, as his eyes settle on the paint splatter of freckles that have been driving him wild for the past 4 weeks.
On Shane's left cheek is Cephas and Orion and Canis Major. On his right, Perseus and Virgo and Centaurus. Lyra and Cassiopeia adorn the bridge of his nose, and Ilya kisses them all, one by one. He smiles a private smile, says a silent prayer, because they do taste like stardust. Or maybe stardust tastes like Shane.